from the Sky News Centre at 5. Police say the father of 6 children trapped in a house fire in Derby made a valiant attempt to rescue them. 5 of the children died, 6 is still in hospital. A woman in her 20s has been arrested on suspicion of murder. This local resident says he's shocked.
How can you put it in words? I mean, it's such a tragic and terrible thing. You know, I mean, five children in one family.
A woman whose eyes were gouged out by her then-boyfriend is urging victims of domestic violence to speak out. Shane Jenkin is beginning a life sentence for the attack on Tina Nash last year in Cornwall. After panic buying caused fuel shortages at 4 courts across the country earlier this year, a strike by tanker drivers has now been narrowly avoided. Staff voted to accept a deal in the long-running dispute over terms and safety conditions, but the union's Assistant General Secretary, Diana Holland, says it's not yet the end of the issue.
It's a very, very important start, but there are a number of other issues in the industry that we need to address, and those haven't gone away, and the strength of feeling within the vote shows that, so we will continue with our campaign.
Fresh allegations of corruption in the Stephen Lawrence murder inquiry have been referred to the Independent Police Complaints Commission. It's part of an ongoing investigation into the conduct of the Metropolitan Police after the death of the black teenager in southeast London nearly 20 years ago. After weeks of rain, parts of England have been officially declared out of drought. The Environment Agency's lifted the status in 19 counties in the South West, the Midlands and Yorkshire. The Blue Knights have withdrawn their takeover bid for Rangers. The news has been confirmed by the man behind the consortium, former club director Paul Murray. And the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge will be in the audience as Gary Barlow and Will Young perform in honour of Team GB later. William and Kate are the guests of honour at a special dinner celebrating Olympic and Paralympic athletes. That's the latest. I'm Catherine Collins.
BCFM is the award-winning community radio station for Bristol and is here to give everybody in Bristol a voice. BCFM 93.2. Bristol is our community.
Hello, Bristol. Welcome to BCFM's politics show, Friday Drive Time. I'm Tony Gosling, and helping us review this week's news is Labour Councillor for Southmead, Jenny Smith. Old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers is here too. After the 6 o'clock news, the latest book on the death of Princess Diana says a decision was made to assassinate her on Wednesday, 23rd of July, at the meeting chaired by the Queen back in 1997. And massive changes to housing benefit, the new bedroom tax, benefit caps and the introduction of the universal credit. We talked to Will Stone from Avon and Bristol Law Centre about what changes are taking place and when. And to a former traveller who experienced Margaret Thatcher's convoy crackdown in the 1980s, the so-called Battle of the Beanfield. Plus, Republican US presidential frontrunner in this winter's election in the US is Mormon Mitt Romney. But what is the Book of Mormon? And what do the Church of Jesus Christ and the Latter-day Saints believe? We find out from one of two Mormon bishops in Bristol, that's Robert Webb from Whitchurch. That's in the second hour after six. On to our news review in a minute, but first, Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. Tonight, lows of 6 degrees Celsius and dry. This weekend, highs of 13 Celsius, mainly sunny and dry. Next week, highs of 13 Celsius, some sunny spells, but also plenty of showers. Next weekend, that's the 19th and 20th of May, highs of 13 Celsius, some sunny spells, and some heavy showers. That's next weekend, not this weekend. So make the most of the weather this weekend. It's not going to be hot, but it certainly is going to be sunny. That was Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. First, though, the Lopresti report. A Masonic Conservative MP for Filton and Bradley Stoke, Jack Lopresti, said on this show a month ago that he'd give me a copy of the 2012 Bristol Provincial Yearbook. This lists the membership of Bristol's 2,000 or so Freemasons in roughly 50 lodges. Jack also said he'd arrange a guided tour of the Masonic Hall at 31 Park Street, as the Freemasons have nothing to hide. Well, 4 weeks on, two letters, no replies, and still no provincial yearbook. But Jack has informed me there is an open day at the Bristol Masonic Temples behind the Council House on Saturday, the 16th of June. So, joining us for this week's news review is Labour Councillor for South Mead, Jenny Smith. Hi, Jenny. Welcome to Drive Time. First of all, I believe, just heard that you are taking on the portfolio for the Labour Group on the City of Health and Social Care. Is that right?
Yes, I've had it for 1 or 2 years now.
And when Labour were in power, did you, were you responsible for this service from the City Council? I think you were.
I was at one time, back in the 90s. I was chair.
So do you want to tell us about what changes are going on at the moment in health and social care? Certainly, we had the Health and Social Care Bill nationally, but what's that meaning for people here in Bristol?
Well, community health is to come across. That's many of the health issues that are carried out in communities throughout the city. They are being adopted across into the Bristol City Council. So there are changes there. Also, the changes that have been agreed by the Liberal Democrats, who are at the moment consulting on whether they will close some or all of the elderly people's homes in the city and or transfer them to the private sector.
Now, I understand also that some of these elderly people's homes, there are already students living in some of them.
That's what I've been told. I'm trying to check it out, that Unite are using two of the elderly people's homes for student accommodation.
Now, certainly the council have been consulting on closing these elderly people's homes for a long time. What sort of effect does that have on the people who are living in them?
That is worrying for staff. Many of the staff have already been transferred from home care or other homes that were shutting. That is worrying for the residents. But at the same time, it seems to be a botched mess that's completely unplanned, that isn't taking into account the fact that some of those elderly have dementia or Alzheimer's, and some forms of Alzheimer's mean that you really can't look after yourself anymore, and that will mean they have to transfer to the private sector.
Well, the alternative, of course, is this thing called home care, where you stay in your home. You don't go into a specialised elderly people's care home. You stay in your home as you get older, and people will come and visit you several times a day, up to maybe 3 or 4 times a day, to look after you in your own home.
I quite agree, and it's good. But I was talking to an elderly man last night about his. He has 4 half-hours a week just to shower him and keep him clean. He says he's paying when the care worker doesn't turn up. He still has to pay. He said at Christmas, he gave a month in advance notice that he wasn't going to be there on Christmas Day because he's going in with his family, and he wasn't going to be there on New Year's Day. He still had to pay for that. When you talk to elderly people who are having home care, they seem to be constantly being reassessed, and constantly the reassessment means that they get less and less service to support them in their own homes. So ideally, I'd like to stay in my own home when push comes to shove, but will I and others have sufficient funding and support to be able to do so? And the way it is at the moment, some of them are very isolated and alone, and I worry about them.
Well, one of the things Daily Mail, actually, a few months ago, came out with a very interesting article called The Cruelty of the Carers. The point being that when people come and actually do home visits to people to care for them, there's no real sort of hands-on supervision, and sometimes those people can be not necessarily doing their job properly because there's nobody actually overseeing this process directly. It's something that happens remotely, and whereas the advantage being that if you're in an elderly people's care home, there's lots of people around seeing what's going on.
Yes, and what's also happening is some of the families are having to put security cameras in to make sure that what they're elderly person's paying for is what they're actually getting. And we had the incident in Wiltshire where it was found that the care worker had no insurance whatsoever. Now I'm asking on the City Council, are we checking the private care providers that they've got insurance? Two, is it dependent on the care worker themselves to have to pay that? And some of them are on not brilliant wages. Or is it the local authority could take out a mass insurance to actually cover people? it's still not very clear.
Well, the council at the moment is having to implement something like £50 million worth of cuts. So, I mean, there's going to have to be cuts of some sort. And it seems to make sense to, you know, rather than to have a run an entire care home where people are living, to actually do this process whereby one or two workers can go to people's houses directly. And so isn't there a certain inevitability to the changeover from elderly people's homes to this home care system?
I expect there is, and there will be. However, at the same time, there are some people with frontlobal Alzheimer's, with other illnesses, that can't actually look after themselves, who are extremely violent, who, if left in isolation, could actually die. So you've got to have a decent assessment of the needs of the person to meet their needs. And the criteria that seems to be being used at the moment is all about cutting funding. I worry about that. As I said, personally, I'd like to stay in my own home to the very end. That can't always happen. You don't know what illness is going to be visited upon you when you get older.
Now, your portfolio for health and social care takes in an incredible amount of different stuff. What about day centres? This is, I suppose, for disabled people, and also drop-in centres for the elderly. There's quite a lot of different types of day centres.
Yes, there is. Those with learning difficulties, some for those with mental illness, some that people, as you say, are elderly. But unfortunately, there's a wide span of disabilities that exist. Those with hearing deficit, those with sight deficit. I mean, we have actually, sadly, in this city, got people who are deafblind, and they have to have very, very special care. I don't think this government's actually thought through the criteria that's needed to support people. And one of the first things that was cut for people with mental illness, and I think it's a good idea for a lot of them to be encouraged to find work if there is any work, but the first thing they did was cut the Department of Works and Pensions support scheme to have them in to try to encourage them to get work and show them how to get work. So now they're with all the other people that are trying to get a job without any support, which many of them really need.
Okay, also, we've just had the Bristol mayoral referendum. Can I ask you which way you voted, Jenny?
Oh, I voted no. I voted no because I didn't think it was democratic that that mayor can take through a budget on one third of the vote of the city councillors. I didn't think it was right because there is no job description, no criteria, no qualifications for who that person's going to be. And at the end of the day, should one be of an opposite party to the majority of councillors, they can choose their cabinet members from the party, say it's a Tory, then they can choose Tory councillors, even though the majority might be Labour or Liberal Democrat. And that is not democracy. That really worries me. Everybody thought it was the same as London. The criteria's been changed. The only way we can ever change having an elected mayor in future is an act of Parliament. So we've got to work with it. But I'm not happy. And I think history will prove that people like me who had actually read the rules and regulations are right.
So do you think that there was a bit of a lack of ability to get the message across as to what a mayor would mean? Certainly a lot of people I've spoken to were saying, well, we're not going to vote. And of course, there was only something like a 25% turnout because they didn't know what the difference would be between having a mayor and not having a mayor.
Yes. And they obviously gut reaction is most. A lot of people don't like the current structure of the city council.
Because that's the argument.
But one of the things that's wrong with it, and it is wrong with it, is we have elections almost every year. So we're bouncing between parties all the time. Every 4 years is the most sensible thing we could do, but the current administration of the Liberal Democrats are opposing that. Which is a shame, because as I pointed out at the council meeting, you're not playing games with us, you're playing games with the residents in this city by holding back and not coming to the most sensible what can I
conclusion.
Say? Conclusion.
Anyway,
yes.
But the argument for the mayor is a pretty clear one. It's that the city's too bureaucratic. It takes ages and ages to get particularly things like big development projects accepted. And so this is a way of really cutting through the red tape.
I find it very interesting that one of the people putting themselves up as a so-called independent has been behind contesting planning applications all the way through central Bristol for years.
So who's
and
that?
And I worry about that.
Who's that?
Ferguson.
George Ferguson.
But George Ferguson has been a Liberal Democrat councillor. He paid a lot of money towards the election leaflets for the Liberal Democrats for years, and now probably, possibly, I can't prove it, you can't prove it, he's standing as an independent because he feels he's less likely to get in as a Lib Dem. I do think that's not... When you look at this, and you must actually think very, very seriously, most of us fit in somewhere in a broad spectrum of political beliefs. There's not really any such thing as an independent. You fit somewhere in that spectrum and you have ideas and belief. So far, we haven't heard policies and promises from many of them. And I would like to see, it's the how.
Well, one of the things George is saying, he's going to save £3 million annually from the city's budget.
Okay, how? It's there, isn't it? These are the lives of the people in this city. These are the services that many of them rely on. How are you going to save that much money? And is that enough, given the fact that the government are going to ask us to cut more money next April?
Well, George Ferguson is also a merchant venturer, something that he doesn't really advertise. He sees it as just a sort of social club. What are your thoughts about the influence of the merchants in the city, Jenny?
Well, I think that they are exclusive. They are also very well off. They probably have very little understanding of how the majority of people of this city have to live and scrape by. And I worry about one organisation have an unbalanced influence on the procedures and future of this city.
Okay, Martin Summers, Old Labour Oxford Commons, is with us too. Hi, Martin.
Hello.
Now, this week we've seen all sorts of changes. I mean, particularly, I'm thinking of Greece and France, where we've had these elections. Can you just give us your view of that? Because we've seen particularly the rise of this interesting, rather scary-looking neo-Nazi party in Greece, the Golden Dawn.
Yeah, but they only took 7% of the vote. Don't get carried away there.
7% is quite a lot, isn't it?
It is quite a lot, but it's not... Marine Le Pen took something like 19% in France. So, I mean, you could be more worried about that. I think what's the problem in Greece is that the right wing, the moderate right wing, I mean, and the far left and the far right have done quite well. And I don't mean the fascist right, I mean the far right. There's another party called Laos that's done quite well. And none of them are willing to accept the deal that was that's been cut with the EU troika and the IMF. And if they don't accept it, that could lead to a situation where there's a run on the banks, because this is what they're worried about. They're not worried about Greece at all, it's about the banks. If Greece defaults, there's going to be a run on the banks and the banking system could collapse in the city of London. And of course, all this stuff about the euro and the Greeks are this and the Greeks are that, it's totally missing the point. The banking system is teetering on the brink of collapse. That's where we're at. And I think people have finally woken up to the fact that austerity is not going to solve our problems. In this country, the Labour Party is showing in the local elections showed that the government's narrative is failing. In Ireland, they're going to have a referendum on all of this on the 31st of May. They may chuck it out. Any one of these things. Spain has just had to nationalise a bank, one of their major banks. All of this is straws in the wind. Before the end of the year, we're probably going to have a proper crash. And the Labour front bench here need to get their head around that as well. We're not talking about having elections in 2014 and trimming the budget back. We're going through a major, major social crisis.
What about the idea of... yes, Cushman, yeah.
Right. The public sector are being blamed and being cut back really fast. And yet the debt that the public sector has is minuscule in comparison with industry, the banks and everyone else. It's private commerce that has most of the debt.
And don't forget that the banks have been bailed out by the state. And
yes.
That's what's messed up the whole of the sums. and everything is being run to resurrect the private banking system.
But isn't
maybe it's about time to kill it off once and for all?
Isn't the sensible system, but sensible way to deal with this, is to have a pre-arranged default of some sort, where all the banks are told at the same time, we're simply not paying all this back. And this is right across Europe, right across the zones that are affected by this. Couldn't everybody do what Iceland has done, but sort of almost simultaneously?
Well, if you do that, what you're doing is wiping out the wealth of the wealthy classes. And I'm all in favour of that. Let's have the free market. Let's let the banks go down. And that means that Hargreaves Lansdown, George Ferguson are going to lose their money, all of it. And they'll start on the same level as all the rest of us, and we'll see who wins then. But that's the free market policy. Now, we haven't got a free market policy. We're bailing out the private banking system.
Martin, if you're nationalising banks like the Spanish have been doing, can't you then guarantee up to a certain amount of wealth for every individual?
You can guarantee up to, say, 50 grand. But that means that Ferguson and Hargreaves will lose everything except 50 grand. And they're not interested in that. So the banks have got to be bailed out so that they don't lose their money. Now, of course, perhaps we should just let them lose their money.
They have
free market all the way.
They have historically been periods where banks have failed. That's how the Quakers ended up founding Barclays and Lloyds and Coops and all the rest of it. They were because it was because they considered that the Quakers were extremely safe, sound people who made sure there was sufficient savings to take the rainy days. And that's what's been missing in what's happening with banks. They haven't... All local authorities have to keep some capital receipts for a rainy day. Banks weren't. And they were also playing gambling with the money of ordinary people in the street.
But until we have some sort of sensible solution, that is either this kind of sort of measured default or else some kind of mass nationalisation of these banks, we still have continuous sort of pressure for cuts. And yesterday there was a strike by several trade unions, including the PCS and other public sector workers, over their pensions. And I spoke to Roger Thomas about that yesterday, who's from the PCS.
I'm Roger Thomas, I'm from the PCS Civil Service Union, and we've been on strike today on the question of pensions. All we're trying to do is to get round the table to negotiate on the issue of pensions and public sector pensions and the way forward. Our pensions were sustainable, but the government have changed the indexing for the calculation of those pensions and have introduced these extra payments without any authority, but they're now being deducted, and these are this is the first instalment of four, I think, increases which will take place over the coming years. It's indexed as separate on your payslip from the money that's deducted already for your pension. So it's there as a separate itemised block on your payslip, and that money goes direct to the Treasury, not for public servants' pensions, but in order to pay the deficit. So it's an extra income tax on public sector workers.
Now, some people are calling this a robbery. Is that something the word you'd use, the pensions robbery?
That's absolutely right. That is what it is, because you know what we want is a fair pension for everybody. A fair working life, and the working life was set at 65 for men and 60 for women. That was a fair length of time to work in order to be able to enjoy some period of life after you finish work. Now, we're expected to work till 68. Statements seem to indicate that that's probably going to rise again. So, you know, are people going to be working until they're forced to retire early? But obviously, if they retire early, they'll go out on sickness or whatever, and in that situation they will have a reduced entitlement to the pension that they've paid in over a whole period of time.
Well, shouldn't you as public sector workers be suffering just like everybody else?
Well, if it was true that everybody in the country was prepared to make a sacrifice, then you might actually be able to go along with that particular argument. But if I have a cut in my pension, I don't see how that's actually going to benefit somebody in the private sector, or that's going to benefit a pensioner. This is money which is being taken directly by the government for itself.
But the opposition, leader of the opposition, Ed Miliband, isn't really standing up for you, is he?
Well, you know, we wish that Labour would stand up and join us in this particular struggle, but, you know, unfortunately, Labour are prepared to let the government get away with murder, one presumes, on this particular question.
Do you think there are elements within the Labour Party that are more sympathetic then?
Yes, there's definitely certain MPs like John McDonnell who are much more sympathetic to the cause that we put forward. But unfortunately, the front bench of the Labour Party accept much of what the government is arguing. And that is very unfortunate, because Labour as a party should stand up for ordinary working class people. And all we want is fair pensions for all. We're not asking for a king's ransom, we're asking for fair pensions for all, so that everybody can live their retired life after they finish work, for whatever reason, in dignity and outside of poverty. And that's what we're fighting for everybody, public, private, and anybody who will receive a state pension. 68 is too late.
Well, Martin Summers, they're basically saying there, the Public and Commercial Services Union, that the Labour Party isn't sticking up for them.
Well, they're right about that to some extent. That's got to be changed. I'm sure Jenny agrees with me. What's happened in the past is that the Labour Party has been scared of its own shadow. The mood of the society is actually changing radically, but they're still thinking that they've got to keep swing voters happy in the southeast of England in 4 years' time.
But aren't all the three parties trying to satisfy the same few swing voters?
Indeed they are. That's one of the problems that we've got. And also, of course, they're trying to satisfy the people with the money who fund politics. And of course, the PCS has withdrawn its support for the Labour Party, and therefore, of course, they don't feel obliged to do anything the PCS says. But of course, you've got other unions like the CWU, who had their people in previous weeks. They still fund the Labour Party, and they don't get any joy.
That's the communication work.
Yeah, at some point in New Zealand in the early 1980s, the unions and the left wing of the Labour Party smashed the right wing of the Labour Party, brought in PR, and basically wiped them out. And they'd privatised the railways, and they were renationalised on day one.
But that's not going to happen here, is it? Because they already had a referendum on the alternative vote.
Well,
the public said no to that.
Yes, but it wasn't the right form of alternative vote, was it?
No, it was a halfway house, and it hadn't been properly prepared.
It was a botched mess.
And of course, what they're doing now is they're trying to gerrymander. The Tories and the Liberals are talking about changing the constituencies, reducing them to 600, which means that they will have much bigger constituencies, with MPs representing much larger constituencies, and also voluntary registration to vote. So they hope that all the poor people in places like South Mead won't get round to registering, and then they're going to draw the constituencies on the back of that. This looks like Northern Ireland 1964. That's what it looks like.
Happening then?
Well, because basically you had to be a householder to vote. The allocation of council housing was discriminatory. So Protestant families were being given houses, Catholics were not, and therefore didn't get a vote. Well, and the constituencies were drawn in such a way that the Catholics couldn't have anybody
could
elected.
Only get
gerrymandering.
Could only get your foot in the door if you owned land or property.
Yeah.
And they want to put the society. And it's precisely the people that are falling out of our society at the moment that are going to lose out major.
Now,
I'm worried about the people who aren't voting. I think they ought to seriously think about what they're going to do with their vote next time and use it. Please come back. Please vote for the benefit of society as a whole, not for rich individuals.
There's another aspect to all this, and this is something we covered last week, which is whether it's actually going to happen or not is another thing, but the discussion about moving 500 families from Newham up to the north of England somewhere. So,
Bristol's already having people coming to the housing department from London saying they want to move here, and we can't cope with the waiting list we've already got.
Now, you've already got problems with single occupancy, haven't you? Can you tell us about those?
Well, single occupancy is if you get a reduced council tax if you're a single person, but you don't have to pay a third less than you would have done if there were two people living in a home. What's been happening is that people, mostly women, are being challenged about you've got someone living in your house still. And what I've found, and it's really worrying, is it's women, mothers, grandmothers who brought up children who have left and gone off into the world, but who haven't got permanent addresses out in the world, so they still use their grandmother or mother's home for the post. A landlord I came across who actually had bills for the maintenance of the property sent to the property, and they claimed that she was living in the property as well with a single occupant. I've had somebody whose daughter was in the army, and there's a lot of people serving in the forces in this city. They don't have permanent accommodation anywhere, so they often use their mother's or grandmother's houses for a postal vote.
So what's the consequence? Are people then being charged the full council tax rate because...
They've all been getting letters saying they've got to pay the full amount, and many of them are elderly women on low income already. It's really worrying. I've had to tell one to go to the consulate or high commissioner in a country abroad to prove he's there so that his wife, who's in the UK, can actually prove that. And another one, mentally ill, and a grandson, who's what they call sofa surfing. That means he doesn't belong anywhere. He's on his mate's settees.
So you've got your little cards there. I didn't realise this is what some councillors do. If you're doing casework, you actually keep a kind of card record of when someone contacts you, asks you about sorting out one of their problems. You then start a kind of almost like your own
I've
kind of.
I've done 10,360 something cases since I've been a councillor in Southmead, and I came there in 1993. Southmead's wonderful, because they let me know what's really happening to ordinary people. I'm usually ahead of most of the others, politicians, certainly ahead of the MPs. I know which way the problems are coming. I know the things that the impact of policies going through. I really, really worry about it. And can I say what's really wrong with this structure and the fact that they get that letter? There is no structure of appeal. So the only hope they've got is to come to someone like me as a councillor. I've had 7 or 8 of these, and I'm really worried about it, because I think that these are the people that are going to fall out right at the very beginning of society, because they won't have anywhere for their post, they won't be able to vote, they won't be all sorts of things.
They must become non-people.
They're going to become non-people, whereas their mothers, their grandmothers... one of my letters I've sent in saying, this wonderful woman, she's been looking after her grandson, and now she's going to start looking after and helping with a great-grandchild, his baby. I mean, what do you do? You don't give medals out to people like that. You should do.
On to our next story, and we've got the top 1,000 rich list hoarders could pay off the entire deficit with £30 billion to spare. Well, that's from Michael Meacher, who's a Labour MP, his blog, Labour MP for Oldham, Weston, Royton. The Sunday Times Rich List, published today, and compulsory reading for anybody, that was a couple of weeks ago actually, compulsory reading for anyone that wants to understand Britain's power structure, holds 3 extremely significant conclusions. One is that the 1,000 richest persons in the UK have increased their wealth by so much in the last 3 years, £155 billion, that they themselves alone could pay off the entire UK budget deficit and still leave themselves with £30 billion to spare, which should be enough to keep the wolf from the door. Martin?
Well, I think this is the point, isn't it? Over a whole generation, we've run the economy, both under New Labour and under Conservative governments, to benefit the wealthiest strata of the society. So they've been deregulated, the markets have been deregulated, their tax take's been taken down, and they've done very, very, very well. Many of them started off as millionaires and are now billionaires. And as we've seen in the last 3 years, while the crisis has been raging, these people are better off to the tune of £155 billion. Now, that is our money. In the 1950s, we had a 96% rate of super tax, and all that money was taken off them. I've just been reading history of the Second World War. Winston Churchill, at the end of the war, he got paid a lot of money for being the Prime Minister, but most of it was taken off him in tax, and he just had to put up with
well,
it.
Well, I hate to tell you this, Martin, but I'm afraid these people are very, very good at squirreling away their money in numbered Swiss bank accounts and off in the Cayman Islands.
Well, in that case, we make it quite simple. You pay all your taxes as we assess them in Britain, or you lose your citizenship, and that includes your right of residence. Go and live in the Cayman Islands, and you're not coming back, and your kids aren't going to Eton because they will lose their right of residence as well. That's how I deal with
and
that.
And the signature that this government put on what was happening in accounts in Switzerland actually wasn't worth the paper it's written on.
That's right. They undermined the EU's negotiating position,
yes,
didn't they?
Yes, they did. So they let people, the rich, who've got money in Switzerland, get away with it.
Martin, would you in any way dispute these figures? Because he's actually quite good at economics, Michael Meacher MP, isn't he? And he was actually, I think, under the Tony Blair government, he was an Environment Secretary of State.
He's one of the longest-serving Labour cabinet ministers, in fact. He's usually right about a lot of things. I mean, he was one of the few that was willing to say certain things about 9/11, which the rest of them all ran away from.
He's also saying that there's roughly $200 billion increase in the 1,000 richest people's wealth over the last 15 years. I mean, this is also, of course, under your new Labour government.
Absolutely. We've had a whole neoliberal consensus running this country for years, and that's why we're in such a mess. So we had Labour in power for 13 years, and they didn't have the bottle to take on the powerful. So, and that is the real problem with the Labour Party. Not that they were spending more than they earned and all this nonsense you read in the Tory press. They weren't prepared to take on the City of London, which is what Brian Gould said in the 1990s when John Smith first started trying to suck up to the city. He said, if we're not prepared to take on the City of London, we're all wasting our time. I'm going back to New Zealand. And that's where he's gone. And he was right. That's what the Labour Party's for, is to box the city's ears. And we haven't been doing it. Time we did.
And to make sure that money comes down to the most needy. And there seems to be at the moment people are decrying and saying they're not really disabled. We've always had some that ripped off the system. They've always been a minority. And those in most need is where the money really should be going. And with the cuts in benefits, which are hitting women, which are hitting disabled, then many are going to end up feeling devalued and feeling that they can't cope. And I dread to think of the future for our children today.
Just think about the macroeconomics of that. As these benefits are cut, what does that do to the little shops in Southmead?
Yeah.
So in other words, we'll put them on the dole as well, and that'll solve the problem. It's a load of rubbish. That we actually should be increasing government expenditure at the moment, increasing benefits. When if you're going to put everybody out of work, then you've got to increase their benefits.
Yes.
And that is exactly the quid pro quo. And if they're not prepared to do that, they're going to crash the economy. Oh, they are crashing the economy. Whoops.
Well, we do have a double dip recession officially, don't we?
Yes, we do.
Anyway,
the shops in Southmead are struggling. I know that. The local people are trying to keep them going. I mean, there's loyalty there, which is good. But when First Bus took the 20 bus away from Charlton Mead area, they actually took some of the trade away from those shops as well.
Just to finish off on the Michael Meacher's blog post, this thing about the top 1,000 rich list hoarders paying off the entire deficit with $30 billion to spare, he says that George Osborne, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, gifted $3 billion in his recent budget by cutting the 50p tax rate to 45p. That measure alone gave 40,000 UK millionaires, well, I didn't realise there were 40,000 millionaires out there, an average of £14,000 a week, at the same time as those on very low incomes in receipt of working tax credits who couldn't find an employer to increase their hours of work from 16 to 24 a week were deprived in the same budget of £77 a week, around a third of their income through their tax credits being withdrawn.
Yes, and with the increase in rents in this city, 8.4%, which is way above inflation. The fact that although council tax has been frozen, it is still going up because of the fire and police, which have increased it. And families aren't getting the increases in their wages or benefits that there was before. People are telling me they can't afford the increases and are struggling to cope. There's price increases, there's energy increases, and some can shop around, but the disabled and the elderly and others who are not aware of where other or are frightened to go out of their areas, that sometimes happens, they can't shop around. And I'm going back to children. What are the children, what are we handed over as an inheritance to our children of the future? And those that are in work who are being now told they've got to have 24 hours work a week or they lose benefits. How are struggling single parent mothers going to actually fit that in and do proper childcare and be able to love their children in a secure background? It's silly. The whole thing is not thought through.
Just to round off the discussion from this, because I was quite gobsmacked with some of the figures that Michael Meacher teased out here. On BBC Radio 5 Live on Monday, they had a discussion about this very topic, the economy generally, and Simon from Somerset phoned in. So let's have a listen to what Simon from Somerset had to say, and also how Nicky Campbell and the BBC dealt with him.
Let's bring Simon in Somerset in. Good morning, Simon.
Good morning, Nicky.
Do you agree with Daniel Hannan's analysis?
No, absolutely not. Michael Meacher, writing in The Guardian, and states that the annual Sunday Times wish list yields four very important conclusions for the governance of Britain. It shows that just 1,000 persons, just 0.03% of the adult population, increased their wealth over the past 3 years by £155 billion. That is enough for themselves alone to pay off the entire current UK budget deficit and still leave them with £30 billion to spare.
So what would you do about it? I mean, it's interesting...
Can I go on, please? Can I just finish reading this?
You can... Don't read things out. Let's have a conversation. But
well, no, sure.
In parenthesis, let me say to this... Let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a question. Do you agree then with François Hollande's plan to tax the super-rich by 75% to whack their taxes up?
The problem we have here is that we have a debt-based financial system where the central banks around the world are private institutions run by private bankers. We as people and government have to go to those private bankers to buy our money with interest rate. That is debt there and then, and debt is slavery. We honestly believe that our government does govern this country. That is not the case. The people who govern the world, which is being shown very clearly in Europe right now, because the Greeks have just voted in a government that is going against austerity, and the Germans are saying you cannot do that. They're saying the French as well.
So who's
you
governing,
cannot do that.
Who's governing the world?
Bankers. This is private bankers.
Right.
Institutions. The ECB, the Bank of England, the Bank, the American, the FedEx, they're all private institutions, and we are enslaved to them because
right.
we buy our currency. Lincoln created the greenback dollar, and
right.
in the time where he created 4.6 billion government dollars brought into the system without debt, America had its greatest increase in economic activity because the nation was not indebted to private bankers.
Are we enslaved by private bankers, Daniel Hannan?
Well, let me make some common cause which may embarrass him with Simon to this extent. I certainly agree that the world's central banks have not acquitted themselves particularly gloriously. The root cause of the credit crunch was that for a decade and a half up to then, we'd had interest rates that were too low for too long. And that was a mistake that was made equally by the Fed, by the Bank of England, by the ECB, by the Bank of Japan. Money was pumped into the system, which, you know, is now coming out, and that's what the recession is.
Bankers, the interest rate is
Simon,
to reduce our currency.
He hasn't finished reading yet.
The Federal Reserve is a private bank. The Bank of England is a private bank. We believe these are national institutions. They are not.
Let's bring another voice in, Simon. Tom's in Glasgow. Good morning, Tom. What would you like to say?
Currency.
Hello, Tom. Tom in Glasgow's not there. Peter in Berkshire.
Well,
hello, Peter.
While you're looking for Tom in Glasgow, I mean, the fact of the Fed is
yeah, that was an extract from Radio 5 Live on Monday morning. Martin, I thought that was quite an impressive performance. And if anyone out there knows who Simon in Somerset is, we would quite like to invite him on the show to expand his point that he wasn't given a chance to there on 5 Live. But I think one of the most interesting things he was saying there, Martin, was this thing about the greenback. Is this some kind of government money?
Yeah, well, Lincoln was in the position of trying to win the war, the Civil War, and he needed money to do it. And he could either go to Wall Street to borrow the money, or he decided, well, we're going to print the money, our own money, and we'll use that to fund the war. And in fact, it was very successful. He won the war on the back of it. And some people think that was probably the behind his assassination. I'd just like to correct something that Simon from Somerset said there. The Bank of England is not, in theory, a private bank. The Federal Reserve in the US definitely is. The Bank of England was nationalised by the Labour Party in 1946, but the problem with the Bank of England is what we call regulatory capture. They are supposed to be regulating the private markets, but in actual fact they spend most of their time whining and dining with them, and many Bank of England personnel end up in the private sector after they've worked for the Bank of England and so on. So they tend to see the world through private bankers' eyes. But in theory, the Bank of England could and should, in my view, issue its own currency and get rid of the private bankers altogether.
OK, what about this point about who is actually governing the country? Is it the private bankers or the government?
Well, it's very clear what's going on. We've got the 0.03% that made $155 billion in the last 3 years. They're the ones calling the shots. It's not David Cameron, and it wouldn't be Ed Miliband if he won the election. And Francois Hollande and whoever comes to power in Greece are going to face the same problem.
See, what bothers me is what's the point in voting if these money people are just pulling the strings?
What we've got to do is vote for the people who are going to take on the money people.
So who's that?
Well, ultimately it'll be the Labour Party in this country. We've got to rebuild it from the grassroots on the basis of our traditional principles, and we've got to go and do what we traditionally did, which is kick the hell out of these people.
See, Jenny...
We've got to go back to our base. Caring about ordinary people, ordinary lives, and making sure where we possibly could that we can protect them. And delivering education, delivering a national health service. The way things are going at the moment, the big boys are on the doorstep of Bristol, and they will be in very fast trying to take our national health service away from us.
Now, Jenny, how do we convince people it's worth voting when, as we just heard, actually, it's big business and it's these big private banks that are actually calling the shots?
There's an old saying, the time for good people to come into politics is when bad people are in power. I can't see any greater criteria than that at the moment. And I want the young of today to start taking notice that when the price of things go up, when exploitation goes through, someone somewhere is making a fortune out of them, and that is exploitation. And to protect democracy at all levels in our society so that everybody is valued and has a say. That's what we should be doing, and we politicians understand that. But the trouble is, we have been ridiculed so much that people don't believe that some of us still have our moral standing to go back to. We know why we are in politics, and we know that we want to improve this world for everybody, not just for ourselves. A very old-fashioned idea today.
Now, you mentioned the NHS just then. The Information Tribunal has told the government that it must publish the NHS risk register, but I'm afraid the government has decided to veto this, even though it shouldn't. And let's have a listen now to Sean Curran, BBC report from today in Parliament on this very topic.
After a legal battle, the Information Tribunal told Mr. Lansley to release the advice, but on Tuesday, the Cabinet vetoed publication of the risk register.
I recognise that this is an exceptional step. It is not one that is taken lightly. There is no doubt that reform of the NHS has attracted huge public interest. But my decision to veto, while an exceptional case, is also a matter of wider principle, and not just about the specific content of the transition risk register. It is an essential aspect of good government in the formulation and development of policy that officials have a safe space within which to formulate sensitive advice to ministers, and that they feel free to use direct language and make frank assessments.
Now, Jenny Smith, Labour councillor for Southmead, is it acceptable for Andrew Lansley and the Cabinet to veto this decision and to keep the NHS risk register private?
No, I think it should be made public. We should see what it says. It should be a register to show the valuable things about the NHS, to show the areas that they are worried about with privatisation and being handed away from the public sector, and also the impact that they believe will happen to ordinary people's healthcare.
Now, Martin, I mean, this is a little bit concerning. They've been told that they've got to release this, but then they're saying, well, pooey, we're not going to. It's almost like the people like Lansley are behaving like they're in a private business and guarding their commercial confidentiality rather than as public servants.
Indeed they are, and of course we can all guess what's in it because they don't want us to see it. And of course what it's saying is the consequences of this will be inequality in healthcare, some people will lose out, hospitals will go bust and we'll have to pick up the tab. We can guess what's in it, but they don't want to tell us what's in it because they know very well that we're not going to like it. So because they're going to treat us like children and just tell us that we don't need to worry ourselves about things like that, just leave it to us. Well, they know what they can do with that sort of attitude.
Can I come back? Because I've had worries coming out again out of the casework in Southmead. I'm finding that the general practitioners, and I've found this in other parts of the city now because I've talked to doctors, recommended people for operations, basically things like hernia, and the more what I would consider possibly are the more simple ones. And then there seems to be a panel that decides that they don't meet the criteria, so they can't have their operations now. And I am being told by general practitioners this has not happened before, although I am being told by others higher up in the health service that it has. So what we've got is rationing to stop people getting on the waiting list, let alone the waiting list being rationed as well. And that worries me, because you actually take someone's life away and make it so they can't work and they can't do all the things they should do if they have simple things like hernias, things wrong with their knees, things wrong with their hips. We must look at this and see why suddenly somebody has decided to ration to stop people getting on waiting lists.
Well, we've had some interesting appearances at the Leveson inquiry this week, most particularly from the Prime Minister's former press advisor, Andy Coulson, who's also really the man in charge at the News of the World whilst this phone hacking was going on, the news editor. And amazingly enough, when Andy Coulson appeared yesterday... Oh, by the way, Rebecca Brooks, of course, appeared today, and that didn't feature very highly in the Sky News that we heard, and maybe not the one we're about to hear at 6 o'clock, because, of course, that's a Rupert Murdoch operation as well. But with Andy Coulson, can I just have both of your thoughts on him? Because he's you would have thought that David Cameron, when he first employed him, before, actually, the general election 2 years ago, that he would have asked him about why he left his previous job, which was to do with the phone hacking. And apparently he didn't. Jenny?
Well, I think what we should be looking at is the press. The press have got themselves into a double bind now. Some of us have not trusted them for years and always try to read between the lines in any article that appears. But I think it's got to go back to some form of ethical base. It is there, yes, to expose... malpractice in the world that we live in, but at the same time it is not there to expose personal details about people that are struggling with situations such as parents who lost their daughter, such as many of the other things that have been going on. I worry about the press. It is as though they'd lost their morality over the years and a good story was all they were after, without caring about the human beings involved.
So to what extent is this about Rupert Murdoch and the News of the World? Well, and to what extent is it much wider?
Well, it was all about making money. It was all about manipulating society and making people think that other people weren't very nice. Lots of the old-fashioned ethics that I grew up with. We cared about what happened to other people in the village. We cared about our neighbours. We were a close society. But we were also a society that everybody was responsible to make sure that the children were looked after, the animals were looked after. All that seems to have been lost.
It's not necessarily going to work when it comes to selling lots and lots of newspapers, because apparently perhaps what people want is celebrity gossip. Anyway, let's have a listen now to Robert Jay and Lord Leveson quizzing. I must say, Lord Leveson doesn't quiz him particularly harshly, possibly because he's actually a personal friend of the Murdochs who went to several parties before the Leveson inquiry. But anyway, let's have a listen now to Jay and Leveson quizzing Andy Coulson yesterday.
He, that's Mr. Cameron, also asked me about the Clive Goodman case. Can you remember the gist of your answer?
I was able to repeat what I'd said publicly, that I knew nothing about the Clive Goodman and Glenmalkair case in terms of, you know, what they did. I do remember explaining that my News International background... This was not suggested by either Mr. Osborne or Mr. Cameron. This was introduced into the conversation by me, that my News International background should not therefore be seen as some sort of, you know, a guarantee of the support of either of those papers.
Do you happen to know what your vetting status was?
I do now. I didn't then.
What is it, or was it?
SSC, I believe.
And that means?
I think it means security check.
So it's at least a step short of DV, which is development vetting, isn't it?
Yes.
Which is the standard vetting, I think, for someone in your position. Is that correct?
I don't know that that's the case, no.
Did you have any unsupervised access to information designated top secret or above?
I may have done, yes.
Would you agree with this, that if Mr. Murdoch expressed a very clear view, it would require a remarkably robust editor to say, well, thank you very much, Mr. Murdoch, I'm very interested in that. I'm actually going 180 degrees in the other direction.
Be a bold move, yes.
Mm. All right.
Yes, that's rather a pally, Lord Leveson, with his not exactly incisive question to Andy Corson at the end there. Martin, though, I mean, we're talking here about some really serious, him not being vetted up to the proper level, and by a private company, and also having access to top secret documents which he shouldn't have had.
Well, this is all breaking the rules, isn't it? And in the riots last year in August, there was a very hard line taken, and people who put up Facebook pages calling for riots, they were sent to prison. Now, if these top people, who are earning hundreds of thousands of pounds a year, are found to be breaking the law, breaking the rules, perhaps we should send them to prison. Proper prisons, where they've got to watch their back in the showers. Those kind of prisons. For them. Why not?
OK, finally then, it was Europe Day on Wednesday. I don't know if you noticed that. Let's go to see what the UK Independence Party's Nigel Farage had to say about Europe Day in the European Parliament this week.
Like communism, this has all gone badly wrong. And the EU Titanic has now hit the iceberg. It is a European Union of economic failure, of mass unemployment, of low growth, but worst of all, it's an EU with the economic prison of the euro. And this now poses huge dangers to the continent. We face the prospect of mass civil unrest, possibly even revolution, in some countries that are being driven into total and utter desperation. But there is perhaps an opportunity. There is perhaps some good news. That now a democratic rebellion has begun. It began in Finland last year with the True Finns getting nearly 20% of the vote. And we're seeing in country after country new political movements on the right and the left making big scores. But that may not all be good news. Because in Greece what we saw last Sunday was rather reminiscent of the German election of 1932. We saw the status quo centre collapse and the extremes of right and left rise. You know, this project could even cause the rebirth of national socialism in Europe. We are headed the wrong way. We must break up the Eurozone. We must set those Mediterranean countries free. We must try to build a Europe. I want a Europe, but a Europe based on trade. A Europe based on cooperation. A Europe based on us sitting round the table and agreeing sensible rules on crime and the environment. We can do all of those things, but we cannot do it if we're asked to rally behind that flag. I owe no allegiance to that flag, and nor to most of the people in Europe either.
Well, it's Nigel Farage from the UK Independence Party leader there, Martin, talking about the possibility of revolutions, civil unrest and the spectre of the rise of National Socialism.
Well, he's right about all of that, but he's just wrong about what's causing it. He thinks it's the euro. It just makes me laugh. The banks are bust. And if the euro collapses, the banks will go down, and then we will get all of the things he's talking about. But what about the United States of America? They're not in the euro, but they're in the same mess we're in. Nothing to do with the euro, was it? I think you'll find Wall Street had more to do with it than Brussels.
OK, finally, Martin, 71% of people say that it's time to renationalise the water industry.
Well, they're sensible people, aren't they? And, of course, that won't be represented by the political class because they have their arms twisted up their back. But in actual fact, most sensible people know that we should never have privatised industries like that in the first place. It was a nonsense, and people are becoming aware of it.
What's the reason, then, to renationalise it?
Well, the fact is that what you've got is an oligopoly there. So it's when it's run for private profit, they skimp on things like building infrastructure, and they charge the maximum they can get away with. When it was run by the government, you've got some chance of actually controlling prices and infrastructure
investment. Thanks, Martin. We'll see you after the news.